Hello and welcome back to this conference. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming back the wonderful Aki Omori. Welcome, Aki.
Hi, Jai. Thank you for having me back.
Of course, it's nice to have you here again. So you are a trauma therapist specializing in early trauma and CPTSD and a somatic movement therapist and educator. And today we're going to be talking about global high intensity activation known as GHIA. Now, I must admit, I have no idea what that means. So do you want to get us started by just saying what actually GHIA is?
Yes. Okay. I try to be as concise as I can be. The global high intensity activation, it's a bit mouthful, isn't it? Or sometimes we call it global high, is it's like the whole body is activated sort of state. And so it's like there was a massive arousal that happened, but with a very little capacity to either self-regulate, or if it's more to do with the early trauma, there was not enough help to help you regulate. And then people who had that can be stuck in that sort of high sort of state. So that's kind of global high activation. And there are different causes. I specialize in working with people with trouble, with the early history. So that's the area I am going to talk about today. But there are other causes, like electrocution, or like suffocation, or near drowning. Or I also recently heard that drug-induced psychosis, that sort of thing can also cause the global high, and then people can get stuck. And basically what happens, in a very simplicity of the nervous system, because I see the body a lot more than just a nervous system, but so there's a sympathetic nervous system, there's a stimulus, massive stimulus come in and it arousal. So just, I'm going to try to draw the line, so that arousal kind of goes up and it goes so high that the part of the parasympathetic nervous system is going to initially go down, but then comes back up to put you in a more freed state so that you can cope. And then people are stuck here. So what happened, it was that sympathetic nervous system is so high. And then on top of that, there is a parasympathetic dorsal vagal, if you like, and dorsal state of the nervous system is there. So you're frozen. But right underneath that, there's a really constantly, extremely high activation is underneath. And people are trapped in this space.
Mm. So I can hear that. So it sounds like what it is like, naturally we have moments in life where we're going to be like activated, our system activated on alert. Like if we're doing exercise or if we're doing different things, and our system gets activated like this. But it sounds like that, often with traumatic events, the system can get activated, but then normally what needs to happen is that it needs to come back down to baseline. It needs to re-regulate. But that what this GHIA is the getting activated and then getting stuck in this activation state.
Yeah. And also it's for people who can experience this, the cause happened at the beginning of life. So that's kind of people how we live. Some of us really struggle on a daily basis. And, spending probably a lifetime looking for reasons on explanations why that is. And we kind of attach ourselves to different sort of stories and, scenarios and the reasons and, things like that. But if you have, I think, if we had, if it's like a one-off event, of the trauma, and then you can work with that, and you can work with a trauma therapist, or get some kind of help, and then that is back to normal, like you had a car accident or something. But if you have global high activation underneath it, we are always looking at also working with that as well. I think it probably relates to part of the what we call the CPTSD, is complex, because that makes it more, becomes more of the thing. So you can't just look at this thing, you also have to deal with this. I think it's a nice way of looking at it is that baseline. So your nervous system goes up and down. So there's arousal and you come back, arouse and come back. And so the, I don't know how to put it, the healthy, balanced baseline might be here. So when you actually get activation, could be an exercise or, playing or something. Oh, sorry, my lights. So they're like, so we've got lights going up and down. But when you come to the restful place, there's a baseline right here. So you're able to rest, digest, and there's a repair can happen and the renewal can happen. And then you rested enough and then you're ready. Once you rested well, you've slept well, and you're back in a healthy activity, going out to work, going out to play, go and play badminton, whatever it is. But the global high, people who have global high, so remember, like, it went all the way up and then parasympathetic even higher, the baseline comes to here.
Right.
So they can never rest.
Mm.
So when they want to rest, because of their underlying kind of high activation underneath, they can never rest.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a kind of constant, exhaustion and, all the time wired, a bit buzzing. And often, I know it's just my own experience as well, mine is getting better, but it takes a long time for that to kind of baseline to slowly shift, which I think is hopeful. It's not like a one-off thing, but either gradually, and it feels really good. A lot of things beginning to make sense. And so, because it's all kind of wired, that so some people might come across just like a so intense all the time. You meet people, you might experience yourself a bit like that. Life is a bit intense. It's a bit like, whoa, the person is a bit much sometimes just to be around. There's just so much going on, or some people might come across a bit sort of a bit spaced. It might be peaceful but a bit spaced. There may be some cases of sometimes the kind of cases when meditation and things like that cannot quite sort of work with that part. It's also part of that. So people kind of like just look like a bit sort of spaced out, a bit zen-like, but a bit dull. Or it could be really catatonic, like you just can't do anything. You're basically in a collapsed, sort of frozen kind of collapsed sort of state. So you see both, but also like going alternating in between. So we can get up and they just do things just so intense and they can't rest. And then when they get just so exhausted, they might collapse. But collapse is not very restful.
Mm. So I can really hear about how you were saying about the baseline for a sort of regular regulated person might be, say, here. And that when people with GHIA, the whole baseline goes up into activation state.
Yeah.
So even when they're in like rest state or trying to regulate their nervous system, they're still in this high intensity state, right? In this high intensity activation.
Yeah.
So of course it's going to play out in like lots of different ways. And it might play out with, like you said, with people who come across as very intense, having this very intense energy, or and as you said, it's interesting that people can fluctuate. There's different like symptoms. It's not always the same. It's not always very obvious, because at the time it can go into like almost like a freeze state. Like it sounds like there's some parallels with the trauma responses, right? That kind of activated like fight, flight, freeze kind of states. And maybe it's not exactly that, but it sounds like there's these these states people with GHIA can get into, which which is difficult then to regulate, right?
So this, in a way, you know, if you have, when you have a global high, and then there's much less resiliency because of the high baseline, because of what's hiding underneath, or what's covering it up. So it leaves them in kind of very vulnerable state, you know, in a way. I can really see when I look back in my history, when I didn't know anything about the aspects of trauma, you know, that was playing out in my life. And there was, so any kind of small stimulation, you know, stimulus comes in, comes along, and then because it's already high underneath, it feels like an emergency. All the lights come on, like you know, everything comes on. So being able to kind of cope, you know,
Yeah, no, I really hear that, that for those who have it, then, you know, it's difficult. There's less resiliency, and the slightest anything, the slightest incident will activate even more, right? And so again, if regulated people are at a baseline here, something happens, they might just sort of blip, or something big happens, they might have a slightly bigger thing. But for those with GHIA, if they're already here and the slightest thing is sending them up here, and when you think a regular regulated person's baseline is here, you know, it's literally very intense to experience that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Aki, if you can talk to us a bit about how do we work with that? How do we work on regulating?
So there's something about this whole system is on, right? Comes on. And so, like, whenever we are addressing, like, any case, you know, the trauma incident or something, and then we can be aware, you know, you can be aware you've got this global high is happening in the background, because that's what you're also dealing with at the same time. So just awareness is really good, you know, without actually going, oh no, you know, just don't worry. There are ways that, you know, there are so many of us finding ways and finding really meaningful, you know, life is in a process of kind of healing. It's just so meaningful and wonderful. So so the ways, I think there are different ways, you know, and it's gradual, I think, because it's a whole body system. So in all the time, just bringing it down the little by little. And so that's kind of happening in the background while you're working on maybe other things too. And so I'd like to, maybe I'll just tell you a little bit. This is a really simplest picture that I have, I understood at the beginning of coming across global high intensity activation. Is that, so there's an arousal. And then they have the nervous system. There's an arousal, and it comes down back to kind of normal, right? You know, baseline. But arousal comes up, and then as it's beginning to come down, there's something about the people with GHIA. People with a global high intensity, is that there's a luring to continue to go up again. So see if you can see that. So the wave comes up and down, and then as it's beginning to come down, there's a next wave coming up already. And then as that one is beginning to come down, there's a next wave coming up, and then you keep catching on that. It's like a cascading of getting more and more arousal. So that's the pattern we tend to invite in. You know, it's actually really quite luring and tempting, because the old sort of management sort of style comes to play unless the new way is introduced. So the one of the ways, I will do a short practice. I just guide through the short practice at the end of this talk. Just to really do that, something I learned from one of my tutors. So it goes up, and then it comes down. And then when it begins to come down, there's a temptation to follow the next wave going up, but there's a choice point to choose, just really noticing what's coming down. And then we learn to follow that instead of going up, cascading. And then when you follow, this is so beautiful as an experience, it's just so beautiful, but just following this wave all the way, it goes longer than you think, and all the way. I do this with my clients a lot, and it's just a really just a beautiful experience for both of us, just to really witness that. So just that way, and then all the time, it's beginning to shift. That's one of the ways.
No, it's really interesting to hear about how it works, right? How there's an automatic desire and, pull to just keep going up and up and cascading up. And that it actually takes like practice and, you know, work in some ways to get to that choice point and then go down. And I'm looking forward to the demonstration that you're going to give us shortly. But before we get into that, I'm also curious, because you've mentioned, you know, the waves, but you also work a lot with movement and touch in your work. So maybe you can say a little bit more about that and how that can be applied to regulating the system as well.
Yeah, so in my work, I've really combined approaches like somatic experiencing and the gestures and, you know, dialogue, but also I use a lot of touch and also movement in my sessions, and also I'm a movement educator. So, you know, work together. So in the movement, we can really look at the state of the nervous system, you know, through, this is one of the ways, but through the tissue tone, like a tissue tone. So I've got this little tool here to show you I use for the tone. When I say tone, it's not the nervous system tone, but it's a tissue tone. So I have two balls here. One is really, you know, inflated, and one is not so much. And then this, we call it low tone. So this is more relating to, say, you know, more collapsed sort of state. And it has a certain relationship with the gravity. So if I drop this, you can't really see where I'm dropping to, but if I drop this, or drop this, you know, it kind of collapses, you know. It has more relationship to gravity, yet it's sort of dissociated in a way that it doesn't have a clear relationship with the ground. So what we work with this is kind of bringing back the tone. And when it's so inflated, you know, it doesn't want to stay. You know, if I just bounce it, it has a very little relationship with the ground, you know, always up. So there's something about that. So it shows up in another, you know, the nervous system, more sympathetic, kind of high tone and sympathetic nervous system. And what we want is, so something that we talked about, you know, alternating between the extreme state of intensity and the collapse. What's missing is that what in between, as if, you know, they kind of alternate as if there's nothing in between. But life moves more. You see people, maybe Peter Levine and other people use this, but life moves like this, right? So there's a rhythm kind of condensing and expanding. So through the movement and the touch development, mental movement and touch is reinforcing. So if something is just so high tone, you know, somehow we teach them, or kind of gradually teach people to being able to drop down into the ground. And if you're kind of low tone, we're going to just gradually kind of pump them up, and also recognizing the relationship, you know, with the ground again. When it's collapsed state, like, oh, I'm really heavy collapse, but you're actually not in a relationship, even with the gravity or the ground. And so that way we can kind of beginning to bring them up. And so there's something about the power of developmental movement, which is like ABC of life. So whether it's a trauma or otherwise, it gives them the opportunity, you know, that includes the primitive reflexes too, but it gives opportunity to repattern their early experiences and them being able to reconnect with the life force. So it's really powerful. So the development of movement pattern, we go through all the way from embryology to pre-birth, and then the birthing movement, and then the movement, that developmental movement comes after birth, and to guide people through to be really able to work with a gravity relationship, the gravity relationship with yourself and the relationship with others and also the environment. And so it's a very relational piece. So the one of the unknown causes of the high global high intensity activation is the interrupted or somehow this the bonding didn't really quite happen. So development of movement and touch actually really has the ability to a capacity to they're bringing back the kind of bonding experience and re-experiencing the bonding experience with, you know, another person or the gravity, and bringing a comfort into the underbody and the mind, and also the re-establishing the safety experience of safety. And so from that kind of comfortable place and the safety, and you're bonded, so your body tone is there, you have the sense of yourself, and you have the sense of the environment. And then from that place, we can come into more kind of curiosity and a desire, and then resilience can be born. And I want to talk just a little bit about the touch work. So the touch work, you know, really kind of gentle touch, you know, we can also renegotiate the boundaries and, you know, permission, consent, and, you know, through the dialogue and the somatic kind of psychology sort of way of just playing with the location and the conversation, so that people are beginning to get the sense of the and the empowerment, you know, through the boundaries. And And also the touch, once that touch is available, really kind of gentle, safe touch is very, very containing. And so, how could I say? So the containing, and also through the touch, because the touch gives you a sensation, which is not coming from your movement, which is more doing something. Exercise and, you know, movement is like, are you doing? It's a motor action. Whereas the sensory is the incoming flow that you receive from another. So through the touch, your sensory awareness of your body self is really enhanced. And then we have a chance to really reattune, you know, with each other, which is incredibly healing for people who have not really had that opportunity to really feel. Just even like I had a client, I was holding clients, you know, there's working, putting my hands around the shoulder or something, and then she just kind of happened to roll her head, so her head rested on my wrist the other day, you know, on my arm, and she was just so incredibly dysregulated person, normally can't stop, but as soon as I use my touch, she goes into serenity, and then she just rolled her head and rested, and then she said to me, is that okay if I rest my head here for a moment? And I went, of course. And then that is incredibly healing. So something that the person had never experienced as a young person, you know, we get to have. And also just supporting somebody from underneath. You know, there was a people with the early trauma speaking about there was a kind of sense of falling into a void, because there was nobody to really show you, to kind of catch you. You were kind of alone and neglecting something, but just having somebody really supporting you from underneath, and then you are able to really yield. And it's just a massive, massive global shift that happens in the body. So, you know, in just enforcing this kind of implicit acceptance of bonding, like in a pre-verbal sort of state, and just to say that you exist, you know, your needs matter and you're loved, and you know, those kind of messages can really come through in that interaction. And then at the same time, having the dialogue to really support the person to recognize that, you know, as an adult self as well. So anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the attachment movement and its power and benefits in working with global high or early developmental trauma.
Thank you for bringing that piece in. Now, I really hear how important it is for, you know, and how healing it can be for people who have early developmental trauma, which is very much associated with GHIA, that to be able, and that often had a lack of holding, a lack of support, a lack of, you know, like literally physical holding, how healing that can be to have that movement, that touch, that support, that holding later on in life as part of a therapeutic process.
Yeah, just really renegotiating and repatterning, but also, you know, just recognizing, being able to recognize that life force that is within, but, you know, it's kind of nurtured, you know, in that a time. So it's a kind of shift in a global sense of self, global experience of oneself. So global, working on the local, there's always a global thing, you know.
Thank you for bringing that piece in. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we go into the demonstration for the regulating exercises?
I think it's just important, okay, just because of the practice I'm kind of sharing, which I got from one of my tutors, it's something that is so simple, and you can also take it on yourself. And if you really feel that you're one of us, you know, with global high intensity activation, you can actually take this on board and practice. I have been offering this on a weekly basis to a group of people. And there's so many people have actually came back to me and said how much they felt the difference. I didn't tell them what it was, but they had their own experience and kind of came back. Sorry, there's lights coming in. What I mean to say is that the importance of you coming on board for your own kind of healing process. And then if you go and see a therapist or coach or whoever you kind of work with, whatever they offer can be utilized. So there's something about, so you might feel really kind of helpless, but, you know, really working through the unhelpful kind of self-talk part of it and regulation and everything, but really be part of your own healing, and then you can really team up. I think this is really important. You know, healing doesn't happen until the person turns that corner. So the internal environment, you know, is safer. Maybe you can employ, I used a little bit of parts work like IFS, you know, that sort of thing as well, to really help you come to have a peaceful environment enough so that you can actually be on board.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that piece, because I think it is really important to, you know, take responsibility and become autonomous to some degrees around one's healing journey. And that doesn't mean doing it all yourself, but it means like taking, you know, initiating what's needed and keeping the threads of your own journey, because no one knows you as much as you know you, right? No one knows oneself as much as each individual knows more about themselves. And so then, and I think it's true in all different ways, right? And then especially if you're seeing different healers, different practitioners, different therapists, and trying different modalities, then you can see the thread of what's working for you. So I really appreciate you bringing that piece in.
Yeah, I think because it really makes a difference. And how can I say that, you know, if you feel like finding yourself, there's a part of you that is not somehow willing, not willing to be on your side, to work on yourself. And then instead of really totally identifying with that part of you, you can kind of come in with a curiosity, what is this part?
Yeah.
And then, you know, path could open up. So it's not like I'm responsible. But you can't. It's not like ignoring the part that doesn't want to. So we can be really curious. So we can include that part to be in a room, you know, with a curiosity, and then you know the path will just go forward.
Yeah. Yes, I'm aware of time. So do we want to go into the demonstration now?
Yeah. Okay, great. So this exercise I was given by it's actually a tutor on the somatic experiencing called Lel Keen. And she called it 3 steps down. So it's going to be kind of maybe slightly my version, not exactly how she might have shared it with us, but it's just exercise for lowering the global high activation. And really helpful over a long period of time. If you do it often enough, you will find a significant change. But in a small doses, like a small doses creating, small dots creating a large shape, something like that. Okay. So I'd like you to, each of you to just to find a place that feels comfortable. You can be seated, you can lie down, but find yourself in a comfortable position. And then just settle there for a moment. And then begin by just turning your attention, just gentle, keep your eyes soft, but turning your attention inward into the sensation of this global high activation in your system. And it is often experienced as like an electrical buzzing, or it could be manifest in a different ways, maybe some kind of tightness. Just give yourself time to notice that. And once you have identified this sensation of global high activation in your body, just simply just rest your attention on it. Just resting your attention on it without trying to change it. We don't need to change anything. Just being curious about it. And then noticing. And then see if or how it might spontaneously change when you pay attention to it. Nothing might happen. But just resting your attention on it for a while. And then within a minute or two, the level of activation will go down a little bit. It's very important to pay very close attention, often because this step down can be very, very subtle, almost like imperceptible. It could show up in like a little bit of deeper breath, or some kind of releasing the tension in a part of your body, or the perception that the electrical sensation became just slightly less dense. Or it could be something else for you. And when you notice that, the global high activation lowered, bring all your attention to what it feels like in your body when the activation is just a little bit, tiny bit lower. What is the sensation in your body when the activation downshifts? Where do you feel the sensation? Where else in your body responds to this very slight lowering of the activation? And then keep paying attention to the sensation of what it's like. There is less activation in your body. Before too long, the activation will lower just a little bit more. And then you just continue to paying attention to what it's like in your body when the activation goes a little bit lower. Really notice it. Are there places that feel calmer? How does the rest of your body respond to this increased sense of calmness? Soon, the activation will lower again, downshift again. So we have done three steps down. And after you have gone through three steps down, you can repeat the exercise if you wish. Or by then, you might feel already pretty low. But if you continue to follow this downshifting wave, you might notice all sorts of parts of you beginning to release. It really surprised me when I first tried it. Something else that I never knew, there was a tension, was letting go. And then my voice changed, and there's something. And then I was calmer the 3 days, following 3 days. Okay. So every time when you complete this exercise, you know, you will resolve a small amount of the global high activation in your system. And then, you know, in the words of the Leo King, who wrote this three steps down, this exercise practiced faithfully, she writes, over a long period of time, can really have significant results.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I'm curious because I don't know if I have GHIA, but I do have ADHD. And I know for a lot of people with trauma or with ADHD or things like that, it can be very difficult to sit still and pay attention to one thing in that way. So I was wondering if you had anything to say about that, about the actually doing the exercise and bringing oneself to paying attention and turning inwards if one has a very activated state.
Yeah, I really resonate with that, you know, just with my own, because I have, you know, the tendency for the ADHD as well. And so maybe try often enough in a different times, and then sometimes it will stick. Maybe not every time. Sometimes kind of resorting a little bit of the movement might be a helpful one for you, because like things to kind of walk up. And also when we are kind of resting on, just resting your attention on something, you know, it could be a bit of kind of five hyper-focus moment, I don't know. But you can just really just be with that, and then just have, so your session might be a little bit shorter, but if you, I'm sure it varies to each person, but I'm sure when you notice, just get sort of intrigued about the just a little downshifting and a following, you're beginning to also feel intrigued, but also beginning to feel some sense of relief, which your body self would welcome. So that's what I can say, but I'm just reassuring you that it works somehow, because I have it, you know, I'm quite ADHD, you know, although I'm not diagnosed for it, but I have everything, and I have global high, and but this was, this is such an accessible exercise, so I recommend it.
Thank you so much for your time today, Aki. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, just go to my website, akiomori.com. And if you're after having sessions with me, and you go to the therapy section of that. And I do in person and Zoom now. And also I have Instagram, Akisomatic. And I just put some exercise and information, things like that.
Amazing.
So, great.
Thank you
Good
so
to
much.
See you, Jai.